This is Anne McCubbin talking with Becky Lancaster and Justine Menzies about our report, Improving Civil Contingencies Planning. Becky, what's the report about?
In 2004, the Civil Contingencies Act was introduced to help organisations ensure they have effective arrangements in place to prepare for, respond to and recover from all types of emergencies. These emergencies cover a wide range of events that can impact on people's welfare, the environment or security, such as local floods, the current flu pandemic, right up to terrorist attacks. And in recent years, we have seen a number of these events taking place within Scotland. So our report looks at what progress has been made in Scotland since this legislation was introduced, particularly in relation to the duty on key organisations to work together. The report also identifies some areas where improvements could be made.
So what have you found?
We found that overall key organisations are working well together, both to prepare for and respond to emergencies. There are 8 strategic coordinating groups, known as SCGs, that cover the whole of Scotland, and these provide the focal point for local multi-agency planning, and we found that these have added value to joint working. However, we also found a number of areas where more could be done to improve arrangements for dealing with emergencies, and I'll mention just a few key areas. First, we found that most progress has been made in relation to the more traditional aspects of emergency planning, such as response arrangements, and less progress in relation to arrangements for ensuring continued delivery of services to people and the recovery of those communities affected by the emergencies. So, for example, the Category 1 response in Scotland, that's the main public organisations involved in responding to emergencies such as the police, health boards, fire and rescue services and so on, most of them have got generic emergency plans in place, whereas only around half have corporate business continuity plans. We also found that overall the arrangements for civil contingencies planning are complex, and we found that governance and accountability arrangements could be clearer. So, for example, although the 8 strategic coordinating groups are the focal point for multi-agency planning and response, they're not statutory bodies and they don't have any binding decision-making powers, so it's not clear who's responsible for decisions made at this strategic level. Also, we found that there's no national protocol for information sharing, and we found there could be a more standardised approach to this. For example, we found that some key organisations use different security markings on documents, and some have different definitions of what constitutes an emergency. This can lead to differences in when and how information is communicated. We also found there could be wider and more systematic sharing of good practice and of the lessons learned from training exercises and from actual incidents. At present, sharing of this kind of information tends to be limited to those organisations within the same SCG area or to the participants of exercises. Another key finding of our report is that there's potential for more collaboration between individual organisations to increase capacity and to make more effective use of resources. Emergencies can place significant demands on individual organisations, be it through staffing or equipment or on finances, and formal mutual aid agreements can really help organisations provide each other with additional resources and support. However, with the exception of the emergency services, these types of formal agreements are not commonplace among public sector bodies in Scotland.
So, Justine, what's the importance for the public of all of this?
Well, as we've seen, disruptive events can happen at any time, such as the recent pandemic flu outbreak, and this can have a direct impact on the public. Obviously, other than the health risks, there's impacts such as the immediate need for childcare that can cause disruption to people's lives. Other events, such as the fuel dispute in Grangemouth last year, also had the potential to impact on people's lives. For example, it could have led to fuel being prioritised to critical services, such as police, cars and ambulances, and this could have limited the availability of fuel to the public. As these examples demonstrate, it is important that key organisations work well together to ensure an effective and timely response to emergencies, and to make sure that key services can continue to be delivered, such as ensuring that doctor surgeries continue to open and that medication continues to be delivered in the home to those that need it. It's also important that key organisations work well together to help communities to recover from an incident. So while we have identified areas for improvement in our report, we also provide the public with assurance that a lot of work is being done to improve civil contingencies planning in Scotland.
And finally, what do you want to see happening as a result of this report?
To help make improvements, we've made a number of recommendations aimed at the Scottish and UK governments and also the main organisations involved in dealing with emergencies in Scotland. We've also included a checklist for those that work in this area to look at how progress towards meeting these recommendations is being made. So some of the recommendations are around developing business continuity and recovery arrangements by ensuring that plans are formally in place and tested and that staff are aware of their roles and responsibilities. Also having a more standardised approach to information sharing across Scotland, including the sharing of sensitive information. We also recommend having a better sharing of good practice and the lessons learned from previous emergencies and exercise that would be of benefit to organisations. Organisations could also make better use of resources and develop more efficient ways of working, such as better sharing of services and expertise, recording of costs associated with planning for, responding to and recovering from emergencies, as well as developing more formal mutual aid agreements. And finally, at a national level, there's a need for roles and responsibilities to be clarified, and more cross-boundary and cross-border planning and testing is recommended.
Hey, Justine, Becky, thanks very much.